Hi, my name's Paul Baines. I'm Professor of Political Marketing at the University of Leicester and co-author of Marketing 5th Edition by Oxford University Press with Chris Phil, Sarah Rosengren and Pamela Antonetti. This is the podcast for Chapter 17, Not-for-Profit and Social Marketing. In this chapter, we look at the different types of not-for-profit organisations. We explain why they don't always value their customers. We look at stakeholder analysis, where we talk about cause marketing campaigns. We talk about how marketing is used in political and social marketing campaigns. Let's start with the differences between conventional commercial organisations and not-for-profits. With not-for-profits, there's usually a greater degree of transparency. Their mission, vision, and values, and often their strategies, are outlined in documentation which is made available for public scrutiny. And that's not the case with commercial campaigns. They have multiple objectives. They're not just seeking to maximise profits. They're also trying to build some cause or achieve some cause, which is not always often the case with conventional companies. They have multiple stakeholders. They have often boards of trustees which oversee their operations and determine how they are working. And that might include supply chain partners who help them achieve their mission. Customer perceptions are different with a not-for-profit. They're often a sole supplier. Some charities are the only people operating in their particular area, for example. So, in a sense, the customer can, if you think about a conventional commercial organisation, so let's say a chocolate manufacturer, then that chocolate would come in all shapes and sizes, many different types of chocolate, different packaging, and so on. So, how customers perceive charities is often different, and not-for-profits is often very different from how they perceive a conventional commercial company. They usually have a more positive view, actually, of not-for-profits, but it's not always the case. It depends on how that not-for-profit organisation has performed, and the orientation's different. Charities tend to have less of a business kind of feel about them. Although they would benefit from having a stronger market orientation, they are typically less market oriented than the average firm, if you like. Not-for-profits don't always value their beneficiaries, the people that give them money, or indeed their supporters. So many not-for-profits exist in a monopolistic situation, which potentially engenders an arrogant culture towards beneficiaries, and demand far outstrips supply often enough so that this creates problems in delivering a consistent quality of service. You've only got to think about, let's say, an Oxfam shop. No one Oxfam shop will be similar to the other because people donate different things to these shops. And of course, the volunteers that staff these shops are maybe different in how they deal with customers. There may be a lack of market segmentation for beneficiaries because research into beneficiary customer needs is not common because often enough the funds available are seen as better used for funding operations. And supporters don't always feel valued. Volunteer service workers might feel undervalued, and donors claim to be approached too often by some charities, some not-for-profits, and that's probably true. And there are other interactive reasons for undervaluing customers. So dealing with multiple stakeholders can cause intergroup tension when one group's call on resources takes precedence over another. An example would be a university, which is a not-for-profit organisation, typically, not always. And the university, you might have a high-value donor for a university, and they want their donation to be used in a way that's different from that envisaged by the management of the university. That sort of thing actually happens quite often. So not-for-profit should determine which of the different stakeholders have the most interest in their activities and the most power to affect their organization's performance. And one method used to distinguish between the interests and power of stakeholders is a stakeholder mapping matrix. The matrix can be used to identify four types of stakeholder based on the high or low levels of interest. Those with high levels of interest and power are key stakeholders which need to be continuously engaged. They might be funding bodies or powerful regulators, for example. Those with high interest but low levels of power, for example, individual donors to charities, should be informed about that charity's activities to maintain their interest. The third group represents those organisations with high power but low interest. It's important for the not-for-profit to increase information flow to these organisations to increase their interest so they can exert their power in the not-for-profit's favour. So a funding body might do that, or alternatively keep them satisfied if they intend to exert their power against the not-for-profit, as a regulator might do. And the fourth, final group, an organization's relationships with those stakeholders who have little power or interest should either be disregarded or revived. So we've talked about stakeholder mapping, which I think is an important element. But what about, what are the different types of not-for-profit organisation? And here there are really four main types. The first one, of course, is charities. Charities are perhaps the not-for-profit organisation that we're most likely to think of. But they're also social enterprises, the public sector, and, of course, political and campaigning organisations. If we take charities first, then the obvious type of charity would be, for example, Oxfam. And they would use marketing activity to generate funds in the first place. So cancer research, for example, jumped on the hashtag no makeup selfie meme to raise £8 million in a single week. It wasn't a meme that they developed themselves, but they were quick to recognise its usefulness. And that helped them. That helped them generate a fairly significant amount of money through social media. So charities have an important requirement to understand how to use marketing activity and social media and so on to generate funds for themselves. But they also work in association with companies in cause marketing campaigns. And cause marketing is where a company sells a product but donates a proportion of that product price to the charity. And a good example would be the money that that PG Tips works in association with Red Nose Day, which is an organisation that works to... It was first set up by a charity, Comic Relief, to tackle poverty via a biennial telethon held in March. And it was co-founded by comedian Sir Lenny Henry and screenwriter and producer, film director Richard Curtis, the man behind Love Actually. And that so far has helped Comic Relief raise more than £1 billion worldwide since it was first set up in 1988. But Red Nose Day has been a very successful charity, and that's now actually been taken up in America. So Red Nose Day now exists in the US, obviously with comedians in the US. PG Tips decided to work in association with Red Nose Day to support their causes, and so there's a picture of their mascot, which is a cloth monkey. A monkey is pictured on the front of PG Tips in association with the Red Nose, in association with Red Nose Day, and so PG Tips is supporting the Red Nose cause, and that would help them sell their more tea. But at the same time, the charity benefits as a result of its association with PG Tips. Social enterprises, well, there are a variety of those. Welsh Water, also known as Glas Cymru, is a social enterprise. In other words, it doesn't reinvest. It doesn't pass its profits on to shareholders. It gives those. It reinvests those profits to improve the efficiency of the organisation, and sometimes it even returns that money to its own customers, so people get a rebate on their water, which is quite an interesting way of operating, and that's created quite a lot of satisfaction for Welsh Water customers. Jamie Oliver's 15, the restaurant group, is an example of a social enterprise. Cooperative groups around the world. Group SOS in France is a social enterprise. Special Sisten in Denmark, Solvatten in Sweden, and Newman's Own, the sauce company in the US, are all examples of charities, social enterprises, which reinvest their income. Now, social enterprises are usually set up as limited companies, but obviously reinvest their profits in the company. And actually, thinking of Newman's Own, it's returned more than $500 million, so $500 million to charitable causes since it was first set up. And actually, Paul Newman was prouder of his sauce company, his social enterprise, than he was of his own Hollywood career, which I think is an interesting fact. Now, if we think of public sector, the public sector also needs to undertake marketing activity. Perhaps one good example would be the police. You wouldn't normally associate marketing with the police, But actually, the police undertake extensive advertising in association with different things. But one particular example in the UK would be the See It, Say It, Sorted campaign, which is a campaign designed to reduce criminality and terrorism in mass transit areas such as railways, airports, and ports, and also ensure that people increase their vigilance and report any suspicious activity. So the police used extensive advertising to encourage people to report suspicious activity and unattended items and discourage terrorism. And there are lots of other examples, but that's just one. Now, political parties and campaigning organisations use marketing extensively. If you think of the vegan organisation, PETA, P-E-T-A, PETA, it's used a lot of advertising, often quite shock-type advertising, to advance its message that eating meat is bad. It's famously said, eating meat is murder. If you think about that organisation, then it's using advertising extensively to try to advance its social cause. And you often see charities also having campaigning arms. Amnesty International would be another example of a charity that has a campaigning arm to try and reduce the number of people who are locked up, imprisoned worldwide, in its view, improperly. And political parties, of course, every election come together to ensure that their candidates are elected, and those kinds of organisations are not for profits. There's no money usually going into politicians' pockets per se. There shouldn't be, and so those politicians are usually advancing their arguments for why they should be elected, and that requires extensive marketing activity. If, for example, you think of the US election, then the cost of running the US presidential election in 2016 would have been over $1 trillion, which is a significant amount of marketing activity. And the marketing is very different because it has to be undertaken over a very short period of time. It's all about advancing the candidate's views on certain issues and how the world should look and work. And so it's really about ideological marketing in many ways than the marketing of a product or service. And I think that changes the nature of marketing quite substantially. Okay, that's it for this chapter. Thanks very much for listening.